Myanmar is a place of misery for many of its citizens. The repressive, often brutal military rulers of that country see to that. Political dissent simply is not tolerated, and neither, it seems, is the country's Muslim minority. Some of them, known as Rohingya, made news a few months back when they fled Myanmar by boat for Thailand, only to be towed back out to sea by the Thai Navy and set adrift, unwelcome, it seems, not just in Myanmar. NPR's Michael Sullivan has this look at their grim situation.
I've got this friend who works at an international aid agency, and he's pretty high up. And he showed me some pictures a few weeks back of a village he visited in Myanmar's northern Rakhine state. The pictures weren't pretty. Some of the children were covered in sores with the swollen bellies and stick legs that come with chronic malnutrition. My friend has spent more than 20 years in the aid business and seen places he says he doesn't want to remember, but none have bothered him as much as this. He doesn't want to be named, and the voice isn't his, but the words are.
The Rohingya situation and their plight is very similar to a lot of refugee situations in Africa in the 80s and the 90s. In the first 4 or 5 weeks, there's no water. There's cholera and other public health problems. There's not enough food. But what's different here is that it's been going on for a very long time. Systematic oppression that's been going on for years.
In some parts of northern Rakhine State, the acute malnutrition rate is 25%. The World Health Organization calls 15% an emergency. And yet many in Myanmar's Buddhist majority speak of the Rohingya problem in the same way the Nazis used to talk about the Jewish problem.
I think it's fair to say that the military's approach to the Rohingya is probably shared pretty widely throughout Burmese society. Trying to actually find the foundation for this level of hatred is really difficult. You just don't know where it comes from.
David Matheson is a Thailand-based researcher for Human Rights Watch.
Other ethnic minorities get treated very, very badly as well, but not to the savage extent that you see against the Rohingya, not to that, you know, being denied citizenship, being denied rights, being denied that they even exist. The government fully recognizes the Shan and the Quran and many others, but not this minority on the fringes.
The Buddhist majority say the Rohingya are really Bengalis and belong in neighboring Bangladesh. It's an idea encouraged by Myanmar's military. Fanciful fears of being overrun by Muslim hordes is one reason. Racism is another. A few months ago, Myanmar's consul general in Hong Kong wrote a letter to his fellow diplomats, insisting the Rohingya did not belong to his country. Their complexion is dark brown, he wrote, while the complexion of Myanmar people is fair and soft and good-looking. The Rohingya, he went on, are ugly as ogres. Most of Myanmar's million or so Rohingya live in northern Rakhine State on the Bay of Bengal, and here most of them stay. At the crowded airport in the capital, Sitwe, there are no Rohingya faces among those waiting for planes because the military doesn't allow Rohingya to leave Rakhine State. The rest of Myanmar is simply off limits. My guide in Sitwe, a 29-year-old Buddhist, has no problem with this, as I learned on a visit with him to Rakhine State's Museum of Culture.
Okay, so here we are on the second floor, and this section is nationalities of Rakhine.
Rakhine nationality, and these are the ethnic tribe who lives in Rakhine since long time ago. Rakhine Mrul, this is Mrul tribe. And this is called Thep tribe. This is Dainas, another race, another tribe.
But you say that 40% of the population is Muslim. How come Muslim not here?
Muslim is not a tribe, not an ethnic group, not a member of our community.
But you say they've been here for hundreds of years.
Yeah, but we don't regard them as a member of us.
Still, the Buddhist majority does find the Rohingya useful at times. Sitwe Harbor, just before midday, under a scorching South Asian sun. Dozens of laborers unload 100-pound sacks of rice from water taxis, carrying them to shore on their backs. It's brutal work, and all of the men doing it are Rohingya. Dark-skinned and wiry, they're paid about $1 a day, and even my Buddhist guide admits they're hard workers. And a good thing, too, because most Buddhists, he says, don't like and wouldn't do this kind of work. The Rohingya say they don't like it either. We don't have a choice, the men say. It's the only work we can get, and we can't go anywhere else. We have no registration cards and no citizenship. Sounds like being in prison, I say. Worse than prison, one man shoots back, because in prison, at least you know you're going to eat. The situation is worse about 60 miles to the north, near the border with Bangladesh. It's an area closed to most foreigners, except a handful of aid workers. But some Rohingya who fled successfully were happy to speak from their refuge in Malaysia. 32-year-old Dil Muhammad comes from a village near the border town of Mongdao. His litany of complaints is long and bitter. They put my wife in jail for traveling to another village without permission, he says, and she died in custody. Another time, a tiger killed one of my cows, he says, and when I reported it, they accused me of poisoning the cow and said I had to pay a fine of 30,000 chat, about $30, or go to jail. Another man, 39-year-old Ismail Lalu, says Buddhist authorities don't allow Rohingya to marry without paying a hefty bribe. And the last straw for him, he says, was when the military forced him to help build a new village for Buddhist settlers on Muslim land. Both men fled the country by boat, and their stories, says Rohingya rights activist Chris Liwa, are numbingly familiar.
Arbitrary taxes, forced labor, construction of Buddhist villages in the middle of Muslim area, confiscation of land. That's part of the combination of persecution that the Rohingya are facing. And in that situation, I think many people just hope to flee and find a better life somewhere else.
And that's just fine with Myanmar's military rulers, who've driven the Rohingya out in large numbers before, in the late 70s and early 90s, and seem quite happy looking the other way this time around, as many Rohingya flee to squalid camps in Bangladesh or pay smugglers to take them to Thailand or Malaysia. None of these countries are keen on keeping them. Economic migrants, they say, not our problem. My friend the aid worker says that's not good enough. Aid agencies like his, he says, help keep the Rohingya alive, but just barely.
I've been in these situations before, and I'm used to dealing with them. I'm rarely shocked by anything that happens, but after I came back, I realized I was walking through hell there. It wasn't a gray zone. It was hell for these people. And it's been that way for a long time. And their hell isn't going to change anytime soon.
Michael Sullivan, NPR News.